Welcome to Off the Charts, the Horse Racing Stakes Picks podcast. This is a special best of Horse Nugget segment, episode number one. Steve and I are both off to Vegas this week, but you are in for a treat. These are those Horse Nugget segments that we did in past episodes, and they include many of the handicapping tools you should be aware of, including the Tomlinson ratings, the buyer speed figures, the winning angles, and jockeys that all should be in your handicapping toolbox. But don't worry, Steve will be handicapping the races this week. That's why it's so important for you to be following us on Twitter at OffTheChartsHR, as Steve will post all his picks as usual this week. If you do not want to follow us, you also can go to twitter.com/OffTheChartsHR, and you should be able to see the picks that way as well on the website. And that would give you some advantage as well if you want to be able to see his picks. So with that, sit back, relax, and listen to these great Horse Nugget segments. All right, so let's go into the Horse Nuggets segment, and another learning tool that's out there is being able to do the Tomlinson ratings. And we want to have you talk a little bit about the Tomlinson ratings and what that's all about.
Sure. So the Tomlinson ratings, Dave, and you know, there's a lot of math involved in how obviously they were created by a guy by the last name of Tomlinson. It's really a pedigree rating, so it takes the sire and the dam sire, so takes, you know, both the male sides of the breeding, and based on performance of the offspring of the sire and the dam sire, comes up with ratings on how horses might run given a particular surface or a particular distance. For handicapping purposes, this is the stuff that you need to know. Now, first of all, the Tomlinson ratings are found up in the upper right-hand corner of the Daily Racing Form Past Performances, and where it says, you know, when you look at a particular horse and it says D.FST, and then it says wet, and then it says SYNTH for synthetic, and then turf, and then distance, right? DST with whatever the sign is for whatever the race is today on whatever surface they're running on. Those numbers in parentheses are the Tomlinson ratings. For handicapping purposes, it's just good to know that anything over a 300 rating at that in that particular condition, whether it be a wet surface, turf, a fast dirt track, whatever it might be, anything over 300 is a good rating. Anything over 400 is an excellent rating. So for our purposes of handicapping, I've mentioned the Tomlinsons a few times as we've been handicapping these races, Dave, and that's the gauge that I use. The gauge that I use is 300 is a good rating, 400 is an excellent rating, and then obviously anything under 300, I have to really start to consider whether the horse fits whatever the condition is of that particular day's races. This is how I use the Tomlinson. Obviously, the Tomlinson ratings are great for a horse trying something for the first time, right? So if a horse is on a sloppy track for the first time, those Tomlinson ratings are great to look at. If a horse is on the turf for the first time, that's another great thing to look at. Well, what's his Tomlinson rating? And then also you can see when you look at the Tomlinson ratings, you can take a look at how the horse has actually performed, you know, on the turf or on a wet track before. But if they've never done it before, you see zeros across. So that gives you the opportunity then to try to decipher whether the breeding will impact how well this horse will run given the conditions. So I like to use them for horses trying something for the first time. I like to use them for horses that are stretching out. So horses going from a sprint to a route, I like to see what their route Tomlinson rating is for the race today, which would be at a route. And if they've sprinted the last time or if they've only been sprinting, that will give me a good indication whether at least from a pedigree standpoint, whether they can be successful stretching out. Another way that I use the Tomlinson figures is if a horse has been racing on a surface that say a horse has been racing nothing but dirt races. I always like to go back and look. Maybe they've got one or two turf races in their past performances. Well, when they go back to a preferred Tomlinson figure, where it's a strong Tomlinson figure, after they've been racing on something different than that, I like to take a look, and you can get some nice price horses by going back to a better Tomlinson fit. I like to look also at horses, expensive horses who might have failed in one or two starts on a given surface. But if they've got a strong Tomlinson in that area, even though they may not have performed the first or second time out, I will give them still a little bit more credit, knowing that they were bred to run at whatever distance it is or whatever surface it is. So, and then the last thing to mention is they're very beneficial for sloppy or mud tracks, especially when the horse hasn't had a race on that kind of surface before. I found that the Tomlinson ratings give you a really strong indicator about those horses that are mudders and the horses that race well in the slop. So, you know, there's a lot of information that you can get on the internet, Dave, for mm-hmm. people who want to go deeper as to how these ratings are created. But I'm just letting the handicappers and the listeners and the people that are picking horses that are listening to this podcast, that's how I use the Tomlinson ratings. And I, you know, I want to make sure everybody understands where they're located and what they mean.
Yeah. It seems like a simple process. I, you know, so basically I've got out of it was anything over 400. You really want to look close at, because especially in, you know, some of the races are turf races. If it's a 400 rating on the turf, then that might be a better choice, right?
Exactly. And even more importantly, if you have that 400 rating and the horse has never been on the turf before, okay, right? So for me, once they start producing, you know, wins and seconds and thirds and maybe out of the monies at a given on a surface or a distance, then you have to start taking – then I start to take the breeding out of the equation, and so I don't consider the Tomlinsons as much. Mm-hmm. But when they're lightly raced – on a surface or a distance, or they've never done it before, I like to use those as a good gauge as to, and a lot of times it's the thing that helps make the final decision in between two horses that, that I'm trying to make a top pick on. And as we go through the card today, Dave, I'll kind of mention, okay, where I've used the Tomlinson in making some of these selections today.
Great. Right. And this is a segment I've been really enjoying. I'm glad you thought of this and we were doing this, this horse nuggets segment. And I've always been confused of understanding what the bio figures and speed figures are. I'm glad you're going to talk about this today. Tell us a little bit about what the bio figure is.
Yep. So what I did, Dave, and yes, we're going to, in this horse nugget segment, we are going to talk about buyer speed figures. You know, probably most of the folks that are downloading this podcast are either know a whole lot about buyer speed figures, or at least have heard what the term buyer speed figure, but it is the numeric number that's in the racing form that is a reflection of the horse's final time for the distance over the track surface, but more importantly, it incorporates a daily variant to come up with a number. So that variant is just really simply, did the track run fast or slow that particular day? It gives you an indicator of how fast the horse raced in that particular race. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about the buyer speed figures for me, Dave, is that they don't necessarily predict how the horse is going to run today. Really what they are is a handicapping tool that allows us to at least examine what a horse might do in the next start. And I made some notes here and just some things I want to talk about how I incorporate the buyer speed figures into my handicapping. I would say probably the first thing that I look for is I look for what handicappers like to term the bounce. And the bounce is after a horse has produced a very high buyer speed figure, whether it be a lifetime mark, so the horse has never had a buyer speed figure that fast, or has come off a very long layoff and produced a very high buyer speed figure. Often horses that produce extraordinary buyer speed figures, first time off a layoff, or they've produced one that is a lifetime high, have a tendency to not produce a similar figure the next time out. So they call that the bounce factor. Whenever I go through a racing form, I'm always marking with a B and a question mark. Wondering based on some of the buyer speed figures I'm looking at, whether the horse bounced or not. And you can also then use that to your advantage in that if indeed you did see the horse bounced off a very fast buyer speed figure, it's likely then that the next race, the horse might come back and produce a very competitive or high buyer speed figure. So you can use that bounce angle as one of your angles when you're handicapping. The other thing that you want to make sure that you take into consideration is that the buyer speed figures are not necessarily transferable across surfaces. So just because a horse produces a 101 buyer speed figure on the turf doesn't mean that they're able to produce that same type of speed figure on the dirt or in the mud. And also you find that some horses are able to produce a much higher buyer speed figure sprinting versus routing. Sometimes they're able to produce a much higher buyer speed figure depending on the track that they're racing at, because, you know, certainly horses like certain tracks and certain surfaces and can produce different numbers based on that. So these are all things that I look at when I'm doing my handicapping. The other thing that I like to do with the buyer speed figures is I like to look for consistency. So I like to see horses that can produce multiple figures in the same range to see if that range is competitive with other horses in the race. Often you'll find that you'll see horses that produce, you know, a buyer speed figure that's, you know, 15, 20 points higher than anything they've ever done in their lifetime. I call those the one-shot wonders. There's a number of handicappers that call those freak performances. Often those horses in their next start will get over bet. And so I like to look for horses then to try to beat those horses that have, you know, produced a freak effort or a one-hit wonder kind of effort. I use my buyer speed figures as a way to judge and evaluate how horses can run off a layoff. So when I look in the past performances and see a layoff, I like to look at, see what kind of buyer speed figure they produced off a layoff, especially if they're off a layoff in the particular race I'm looking at. Another thing that affects buyer speed figures, Dave, is the pace of the race. So, you can get at a mid or average type buyer speed figure, especially if in a race where the pace might have been slow and your horse really raced really fast at the end of the race, which is why in other podcasts you've heard me talk about quarter mile increments and eighth of a mile increments as another way to evaluate how fast a horse can race. So I just want the listeners to be conscious of the fact that pace does affect your buyer speed figure. If you are a user of the DRF Formulator product, which is the nugget that I talked about last week's podcast, yep. You can get the buyer speed figures in a graphical format for every horse in the race, and you can start to look for patterns. Some horses have that pattern where they race a good race and then a bad race and then a good race and then a bad race. Some horses you can see in their pattern look like they're probably coming into a peak performance. I do use those buyer graphs often, especially for horses that have a lot of races in their past performances. And then you can start to get some really interesting patterns. Another thing I like to do with the buyer speed figures is look to see if a horse is on the improve or whether the horse is starting to regress in productivity. So, I like a steady progression in the buyer speed figures. That tells me a horse is getting better and getting ready for a peak performance. And then I also like to look and see where a horse has maybe reached their peak performance after two or three outings and is likely to regress. You know, these are unlike what a lot of folks think, these horses are not machines, Dave. So they don't reproduce the same numbers over and over and over again. So in order to be an effective handicapper, you really have to figure out what kind of performance you think the horse that you're looking at is going to produce today. And one of the ways to do that is to look at what they've done in the past. And a good indicator of that is to use the buyer speed figures to your advantage in making that evaluation. So that was my segment on the buyer speed figures, Dave. I hope that I added a few things, maybe even some things that you hadn't seen or heard of or thought of before.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I might throw through nuggets in as you do your picks here, as I see a few and as I go here. So to kind of get the listeners to really take a look closer at this. So great segment. I really appreciate that. So let's move on and go on to the horse nuggets segment. Dan, you were wanting to talk about winning angles.
Yeah. So, Dave, so what I thought I would do with this horse nugget segment this week is just kind of touch on some angles that I like to look for and some plays that have made me money over the course of the years. You know, some of them are pretty well known. You know, I like the turf to dirt angle. So I like horses that are going turf to dirt. But unlike a lot of handicappers, other handicappers, I don't necessarily like a whole bunch of turf races in a row and then to dirt. I like dirt horses that put a race on the turf and then come right back on the dirt. I usually see that as a trainer angle then to getting the horse legged up. Horses get legged up on turf courses and usually will throw a nice performance after they've been legged up on the turf. So yeah, I'm a fan of turf to dirt, but I like turf to dirt when it's just a single turf race and then back to the dirt. I like speed and fade as a winning angle. So I like to play horses who have been showing early speed, maybe over the course of a couple races, usually after two races, and they seem to quit in the stretch. Usually the third or fourth off, a layoff of doing that, showing early speed, eventually that speed carries. So I like to bet speed and fade horses, and I like to bet speed and fade horses, especially when they're dropping in class. So if you got one of those horses that has quit in the stretch, but is getting some class relief today, I like to play those as a winning angle. I like to play the light bulb maiden play. The light bulb maiden play is just any horse that is greater than 0-for-10 in their career. So the magic number is they have to have not won or broken their maiden after 10 races. And then they break their maiden. So they break it on their 11th start, 12th, 13th, sometimes even after 20 starts, all of a sudden they break their maiden. I like to play those horses and bet those horses right after they've broken their maiden, and they call it the light bulb angle because many times the light goes on with some of these horses and they all of a sudden get good after they've been a maiden for so long. They kind of like the feeling and the attention that goes along with being in the winner's circle and being a winner. They can see that they're being treated differently. And a lot of times you can catch those horses at a nice price, especially because, you know, they usually have to move up in class after they've moved out of maidens. So I like to play those maidens who've been maidens for a long period of time and then all of a sudden produce a win. Mentioned it many times on these podcasts. I like horses that are second or third off a layoff, especially in conjunction with trainers who are good with horses that are either second or third off the layoff. I also like horses that are second or third off the claim. A lot of horse players like to play horses first off the claim, especially for trainers that do well with horses first off the claim. And when those horses don't score, the handicapper gets off them or the horse player gets off those horses. I like to take another look at those things. Sometimes it takes maybe a race for even some of those high percentage claiming trainers to figure out a horse, and they need to see the horse on the track. So I kind of stick with those horses and continue to look for them even second or third off the claim. And another winning angle that I like, Dave, is I like route speed. So horses that show speed at a route and then turn back to a sprint. I find those horses get a nice stamina build from that early speed that they're showing in the route. And when they turn back to sprints, don't be surprised that when they don't show early speed at all, but actually those horses have a tendency to close after they've been showing speed at a route. So those are just some angles that I like to use there. I thought I would put them out there. So, the handicappers and the horse players that are listening to the podcast can look for some of those things as they look through the past performances.
Yeah, those are some great angles. So we appreciate, as always, this your nugget segment. So let's move right into the learning segment, talking about jockeys. Jockeys are kind of an important part of the race.
Yes, they are.
Just a little bit. Yeah. And unfortunately, yeah. There are a lot of horse players out there that don't pay as much attention to jockeys as they should, because it makes a difference who's on the horse and how they take care of the business and bringing it home. So why don't you give us a little bit about what your thoughts are on jockeys and what you should be looking for.
Yeah, Dave, it's interesting. And I agree with your comment. Some handicappers don't put a heck of a lot of emphasis on jockeys. And then I know other handicappers that I feel put too much emphasis on jockeys. So sometimes you get too little, and some cappers have a tendency to put a little bit too much emphasis on it. But as you said, I mean, the jockey is in control of the horse throughout the race, and certainly they're an important element as you handicap. So just a few things I wanted to say about jockeys and how I view them and how I handicap races. You know, one of the first things that I like to do, Dave, is I like to get a feel for certain jockeys on the circuit that they ride in. So whether it's in the Midwest or in the Northeast or out on the West Coast, wherever it is, I like to have a pretty good feel for the jockeys on that circuit and what their styles are, whether they're good on turf, whether they're good when they have horses that have early speed, whether they're the kind of jockey that sits and waits patiently and closes, what their relationships, connections are, success rates are with the trainers on that circuit, what the effect is when they are part of a jockey change. So either when they are getting on a horse for the first time or when they have just gotten off a horse and someone else is taking over for them. I like to take a look as I review the races to see what effect that has had. I like to put my jockeys into two categories. I like to categorize them either as aggressive or patient riders. And I think when you're trying to make a decision on whether you think a horse is going to improve or not improve based on a jockey change, I think it's good to understand if that jockey was an aggressive rider the last time out and now is going to a patient rider or vice versa. Another thing that I like to be aware of, there's a lot of and family relationships between trainers and jockeys. I mean, you know, obvious ones like you've got Keith and Kent DeSormo, both, you know, Keith training horses, Kent riding him, Kent riding for his brother sometimes. You've got Wayne Catalano. Catalano's son-in-law is Channing Hill. So whenever Channing Hill gets on horses with Catalano, they've got to give you got to give them some attention. You've got Ron Ellis, whose son-in-law is Joe Talamo. So I like to look and see, especially with the young horses that Ron Ellis is training, I like to look and see whether he's put Joe Talamo, his son-in-law, up on those horses. And then you've also got Johnny Velasquez, whose father-in-law is Leo O'Brien, and Johnny rides horses for his father-in-law. And actually, interestingly enough, their winning percentage is extremely low. Johnny doesn't win many horses for his father-in-law, which is, I'm sure, not to his pleasure, but it's just the way that it is. Another thing that I wanted to do in this segment, Dave, was just identify some of the jockeys that I have got accustomed to over the years and some of the things that I look for when these jockeys are riding horses. So one of the better betting angles I like is I like horses that go first time to Javier Castellano. He's one of those jockeys I think that really improves a horse when he gets on it for the first time. And even if he takes over for another high percentage jockey, Javier has a knack for getting horses to run for him and run better than they have in the past. I like Corey Nakatani in maiden races, especially in maiden claiming races. For whatever reason, Nakatani does really well with young horses. I know that I read an article not that long ago where Corey said that whatever the horse's racing style is, when he takes over, he tries, especially if the horse hasn't been performing, Corey will try to reverse whatever that style is. So if the horse is a horse that leaves and likes to get to the lead, Corey will try to hold him back and try to see what the horse does when he gets an opportunity to close and vice versa. So, but I do like Corey in maiden races and especially maiden claiming races. I like Kent DeSormo in turf sprints. I like jockey changes when you go from passive riders to aggressive riders, you know, especially out on the West Coast. Chantel Sutherland, I find her to be a pretty patient, passive type of rider. Whenever she is off a horse and the trainer goes to an aggressive rider like a Rafael Bejarano or a Tyler Bays, I like those kinds of jockey changes. I love Mike Smith on speed horses on dirt, and I love Mike Smith on closers on turf. Mike is probably as good as they get in terms of rating a horse on the front end. If you've got Mike Smith and he's on your horse and he's got the lead and he breaks well, he's very, very hard to catch. Johnny Velasquez, same thing. Like Johnny V on speed horses. I like Irad Ortiz on turf. I like Jose Lascano on turf. Tyler Bays is a good speed jockey. When he gets on a horse that shows some speed, Tyler has a tendency to be able to carry that speed farther in the stretch than most other jockeys. I like Julian Le Perru on closers and turf races, both in routes and in sprints. I don't like him on speed horses. I find him to be a pretty non-aggressive rider who kind of sits and waits for his opportunity. And then for those of us here locally in the Midwest, I like Julio Felix in turf races. So I catch him at some nice prices here at Arlington Park and also at Hawthorne in the Chicago area. So I just wanted to make some comments about some jockeys. I wanted to give the listeners some angles that they could identify maybe as they look at the races on Saturday and they pick up on some of the things that I like about certain jockeys in certain situations. I wanted to make sure to point out, Dave, that there are some family relationships that that handicappers need to be aware of.
Well, that's a wrap. That was four different segments of the horse nuggets that we've done over the past year and a half. And four of them, they're kind of important as part of your handicapping skills, which includes the Tomlinson figures, the Beyer figures, speed figures, winning angles. Steve gave some great descriptions on the different winning angles and how important really is the jockey. And understanding how the jockey is. So with that, let's wrap these up. Make sure you're going to our website at offthechartshorseracing.com. There you'll be able to listen to any episode that you want and any method to be able to listen to it. Be also sure that you're following us on Twitter, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, offthechartshr. You'll be able to see all the picks that Steve's going to have for the Saturday card, depending on what track he decides to handicap. So make sure that you go there. And I said, if you don't have a Twitter account, you can easily go to twitter.com/offthechartshr, and you should be able to see the picks. You also can send us email. If you want to send us an email to request the picks, please do so. And that's questions@offthechartshorseracing.com. Also, I'd love to get any feedback, comments, and questions from the listeners and letting us know what you thought of this episode and if you'd like to hear more of these types of episodes in the future. We'd really appreciate that. Either you can tweet us at OffTheChartsHR or send the email at questions@offthechartshorseracing.com. With that, thanks for joining us. Good luck and good racing.